Aquarium Hacks Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 287, recorded March 14th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarium
Hacks. Happy Pi Day.
Indeed, it is Pi Day.
It is. It's Pi 3.14.
Won't be March by the 14th. Time. Won't be by the time you hear this, but we're recording
it on Pi Day. That's
okay,
we're recording it on Pi Day. So right. If you didn't get to celebrate Pi Day, go get some pie and eat it. Because that's the real reason for Pi Day. It's not really about math. It's about, you know, banana cream and blueberry.
Allowing math to be an excuse for you to eat pie.
Yeah! That's a good thing for math to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this week we are going to finish the email from Josh in Perth, Western Australia, because last week it was having issues and only the very first little bit came through. So right. We got the rest of it, so we'll finish going over his. And then we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, so we have two Perths today. Finn in Exeter, California, and Juliet in Paris, France.
Yes, so here we go. Let's hear from Josh.
Okay.
In Perth, Western Australia.
Should I just start from the beginning of his email again?
Yes.
Okay. He says, "Hey guys, I'm relatively new to the aquarium hobby and have had a guppy bristlenose placo koi tank running for about 2 months now, and I'm having a horrible problem with what I believe to be blackbeard algae. I looked up pictures of blackbeard algae on the internet, and they look different to what I have. Is this really blackbeard algae? How can I get rid of it? I read that CO2 helps. Could I turn off my air pumps? I have two, so maybe just turn off one. How can I get rid of this stuff? Having the light on less will be quite hard because I wake up, turn the light on, then leave the house, and then come back and turn it off. Are there any fish or critters that can sort out this problem for me? The tank is about 50 US gallons.
Let's talk about those questions and then we'll move on.
Okay.
Okay. Well, one thing we did talk about last time was the Seachem Flourish Excel, which I have used, and it does, you know, increase the carbon available to the plants and helps them to grow better, and so they can outcompete the algae. But it also actually seems to damage the algae and kind of fight it off. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. I wouldn't turn off the air pumps, because while you might get a little bit more CO2 possibly by doing that, depending on what's going on, because without, I'm assuming you're talking about air pumps that are not connected to your filter, like they're connected to air stones or something like that. I wouldn't bother turning them off, though, because the amount of CO2 you're going to get from doing so is probably going to be minimal, because any sort of CO2 that you're getting atmospherically is going to be a very small amount, and you're going to be keeping it pretty constant by any kind of water movement, even if your filter's not just the air pumps, but just your filter is running. You're going to keep it fairly constant, but fairly low. The only way to really effectively increase it is to, you know, pump a lot of it in, or one of the few ways you can do it. Pump it in with like a CO2 injector of some kind. So beyond that, increasing it, but is not going to be very effective. However, the Seachem Flourish Excel will increase carbon, not carbon dioxide per se, but carbon, which will have a similar effect in some ways.
What about, he asked about the lights, if you should have the light on less?
That may well be an issue there, and I would say just get a timer, a light timer. They're pretty inexpensive here. I don't know how much they are in Australia, but most light timers here are pretty cheap. You can go to a hardware store and pick one up for like $5 on sale, sometimes even less than that. And so if you can pick up one of those, that would be really helpful. We don't have any aquariums without a light timer in this house.
No, we don't turn any of our lights on and off. It's all on timers.
And that goes with any vivariums that have lights on them too. Because
it'd be too much of a pain to try to remember and run around the house and turn them all on and off.
All the photo periods we got going on. It would be crazy, yeah. So I would highly suggest that, and just take it to maybe 10 hours, limit it. Because if you're going more than 10, that could be part of the problem.
Okay. That's good.
And then you can also investigate the idea of doing a siesta period. I would look that up, Siesta Period Aquarium Light Algae, and you'll get some interesting things. Basically, you get have a small period in the afternoon where you turn it off, and that can be hard on the algae and good for the plants. Okay, fish or critters that can sort out this problem. If it is blackbeard algae, and it may not be, as you say, you could look at a few things. It depends what you've got in there, but Siamese algae eaters will eat blackbeard algae, but they will also be naughty and eat other fish sometimes.
They're wicked and evil.
So we've had some issues with that in the past. So I would say try some of those things and see if that helps.
Okay, shall we do the rest of it?
Mm-hmm.
He says, another question I have is, I have four young bristlenose placos in my tank that I am just raising, not a permanent home. Would they eat the guppy fry?
And they wouldn't. They won't.
They're pretty much just veggie sores, yeah.
Well, they'll eat, if there's a dead fish on the bottom or, you know, any sort of protein sort of thing sitting on the bottom, they'll eat it.
But they won't go hunting them?
They won't go hunting little fish like guppies. Occasionally, if they're really hungry, they'll go after the fins or the sides of a larger fish, like a goldfish or an angelfish, something that has something they can grab onto. But guppy fry are just too small for them to even bother. So they won't. That's nice.
Okay, he has one more. Says, we recently just had a massive heat wave where I live, where we had 42 degrees Celsius, or 107.6 Fahrenheit. That's very hot. For 4 days. Is there any way I can cool the water, as I felt the water getting too hot for the quarries and the placos? I just left the AC on for an hour or two, then closed all the windows and doors so it stayed cool for a little longer. Is there a better or another way to cool the water? We're heading into winter now, so this will not be a problem for a while, but it will be good to know for next summer.
Well, you can use a fan, direct a fan at the surface of the water.
Does that have kind of an evaporative cooling effect?
It does, and it will cool it off. It will also, you'll see the water level go down
so more
quickly as you
do
that.
More frequent water changes.
Yeah, you'll need to top it off and do water changes, but it does help. You can cool the temperature several degrees, and that's probably an easy fix, the easy, safe fix. You can do things with ice cubes and so on, but that can also be problematic and too sudden and shocking. And either you put a little bit in and it doesn't make enough difference, or you put a lot in and it makes too much of a difference kind
all
of thing
once.
With ice. So I would say that's more of an emergency situation, but don't worry about that unless you really have to. I would just say go with the fan aiming at the top. It can even be a small fan, and you know, make sure you're careful to position it in such a way that it would, if it were to fall, it wouldn't fall into the water, because that would be a big problem. But you know, position it a couple of feet away, but that so that it aims down at the tank, and that can help.
Okay.
That's what I'd suggest.
Alrighty, so hopefully that helps. And are these his pictures here?
Yes.
Or just for, okay. So we can put his pictures of his guppy tank up for you guys to see.
And you can see the algae, the naughty stuff. And it's, in the picture, it looks a little like it could be blackbeard algae. It also could be staghorn algae. There's a couple of possibilities, so.
Okay.
It's hard to identify sometimes.
Well, we will stay in Perth and go to Matt.
All right.
Oh, except, hang on, my screen is doing funny things. Okay.
Oh, it's back.
Here we go. Says, howdy, Kelly and Russ. I thought I would defend the snotty metric scientist. I don't think you're snotty. I have a Bachelor of Molecular Biology and Biomedical Science. I love science and its humble way of explaining the world. I dabbled in design work for a while, but I am now firmly back in biology land. Now, individual scientists may be arrogant, but science as a whole is not. Albert Einstein said that 1,000 experiments can prove me right, but it only takes one experiment to prove me wrong. Excuse me. When that happens, the scientist then has to figure out a new understanding of the problem. Science is ever evolving and changing with new discoveries. It is not acceptable to just think your way out of a problem in science. You have to test the hypothesis. That frequently proves how wrong you were and is humbling. One of the best feelings in the world is explaining a subject to a layperson. That is when I have the most intellectual fun. It validates me. However, when talking about the metric system and its benefit, it is easy to start attacking the imperial system. Scientists get so frustrated when people do not believe their ideas. They also, myself included, tend to be the nerds in high school and are fighting an inferiority complex passed on to them by the bullies. Well, I'll tell you, Matt, I had plenty of bullies in high school, so I feel your pain. Why does my screen keep jumping around?
I don't know. It's naughty that way.
The defense mechanism for... Ooh, what is it doing? For bullying is to start feeling superior to these mean individuals. As such, scientists can come off as arrogant, believing their way is the only way of sense. And why doesn't everyone else get that? Well, clearly they must be inferior, like those bullies in high school. And as Kelly stated, that tends to raise hackles in the person the snotty scientist is talking to. I read the famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that really does cover a better way to educate others. Talking down never works, and I certainly become resistant when others do it to me, too. I'm glad the U.S. is taking small steps to educate children in metric. Baby steps is the best way to tackle such a big change. That's very true. It would be really hard to do all at once.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Donald Trump probably doesn't believe in metric. He's probably going to build a wall around metric system, right? Sorry, I shouldn't get political. I just, ooh. My apologies to the rest of the world if that man gets in office. I didn't vote for him.
Okay.
And if he's listening, he can quit. Because I don't want him for a listener.
Okay.
That's all done. All done with my... Yes. I don't really do politics. But... Ooh. Ooh.
Well, okay. I really like what...
Just the rest of the world that's listening, please know that there are plenty of Americans... who would like to drop kick him to outer space. And we're not all like that.
I really like what he said about the quote from... Or not the quote, but what Albert Einstein said, the paraphrase. 1,000 experiments can prove me right, but it only takes one experiment to prove me wrong.
He was a cool guy.
That's real science, you know? That's cool.
What's sad is when scientists are not doing real science and they're doing politics because they have a pet theory and so they take what they want to prove... what they want, but they ignore the parts that disprove them.
Yeah, and I think that's what he's saying when he says individual scientists may be arrogant, but science as a whole is not. Yeah.
Okie dokie. And he goes on to say, I'm going to do another big clean on my nanomarine. I'm also thinking of upgrading to a 45 centimeter, 18 inch, 91 liter / 24 gallon cube soon. The cube contains a blacked out back filtering sections where I can put all my equipment without it taking up room and looking ugly in the display part of the aquarium. That's nice.
I have looked at those. Mm-hmm. They're nice. Yeah.
Converting the 6 foot is still way too expensive, and I clearly need to iron out some nutrients issues. This time when I do the clean, I will leave the sand in. However, I have discovered a most marvelous cleaning tool, an old toothbrush. Oh, those are good. It works magically to remove cyanobacteria off the rocks in hard-to-reach areas. I even sacrifice one of my electric toothbrush heads if I need to get rid of a particularly stubborn bit of cyanobacteria. When I did the earlier clean, it left some of the cyanobacteria that was too hard to remove from rock crevices. But with my Jedi toothbrush, I shall finally conquer the dark side of the cyanobacteria buildup. Sorry, my screen is freaking out.
Yeah.
Where we're reading this from.
It's kind of a sensitive screen, I've noticed.
No. Well,
it may actually be possessed. I'm not sure. It
might.
Let me see if I can fix it here.
Maybe your screen is voting for Trump, so it's mad at me. Okay. I'm going to get in trouble, huh?
No, what would I do?
I don't know. Ground me. Okay. What would you ground me from?
Oh, I don't know.
No more making dinner. You're grounded from doing laundry all week. Everybody else has to do laundry.
I do lots of laundry.
I know you do. Although all the kids do it all week. Okay. How do I make that go away?
I don't know. I want to make it go away. Let me see if that works. Hey,
oh,
look at that.
It worked. Okay, let me try this again. When I did the earlier clean, it left some of the cyanobacteria that was too hard to remove from the rock crevices. But with my Jedi toothbrush, I shall finally conquer the dark side of cyanobacteria buildup. I know it won't get rid of it completely. Well, that's because there's always two left over, right? The Sith Master and the Apprentice. So.
Or the Cyano Master.
Cyano Master and the Apprentice. Yes. Okay. But if I figure if I get the levels down to extremely low, it will take a lot longer for it to recover. I've ordered a bottle of ChemiClean 2, which is supposed to kill cyanobacteria within 48 hours. Not an antibiotic, and I'm not entirely sure how it works, but I figure it's worth a shot. I'm also dosing the tank with CyanoClean, This is a small bottle of a bacteria that is supposed to outcompete the cyanobacteria for nutrients. I've been doing this for a fortnight now, but I'm not seeing much difference. On the bottle, it says it may take up to 8 weeks to remove a severe infection. I think mine counts as severe.
Mm.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let us know how those...
Yeah.
That multi-pronged approach.
Mm-hmm. What you think works. Of the products. Yeah. My four peppermint shrimp are doing great, as is my fighting conch. The macroalgae tends to get red cyanobacteria growing on its leaves. That is annoying. However, I can remove the infected leaves, and there's enough of the base plant for the macroalgae to keep growing. The macroalgae has started to attach itself to the rock, which is fantastic. A small sprig left the main body of macroalgae and attached itself to a different rock. When I upgrade to the 45-centimeter cube, I shall get some... Is that Kaito?
Different people pronounce it different ways. I think keto.
Oh, okay.
Is the way I've heard it most of the time.
To put in the filter section. Keto is supposed to be the fastest growing macroalgae out there. I'm not sure what the macroalgae I have in the main tank are called. The leaves are bright green and a similar shape to sage leaves in a small bundle. I shall put a tiny LED on the back refugium and run it 24/7. If I can get the tiny LED low enough, I think I can have the light not keep me up at night. Remember, the nanomarine is in my bedroom.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's important hard to sleep with that on. I like to have it dark when I sleep.
I've had keto before.
What did
Some
you
Some people
think?
Call it Cheeto, too. Anyway. It's pretty good. I like the fact that it grows so easily, but it doesn't attach to the rocks, because I think it... excuse me. I'm not going to bother to edit out the coughs, everybody, this time. Sorry, because...
There's too many.
There are too many, because I'm still recovering from being quite sick last week. So, sorry about that. Where was I? I was talking about... Yeah, keto is nice that way, because it doesn't really attach.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of goes around in little... It's like a giant green scrubby thing. It makes little loops and coils all over the place. And so it's not as invasive. Like, I had grape caulerpa once, which looked really cool, but the problem is it grew everywhere in my tank. Just totally took over. And it was awful. And I would have to take it, and I'd go in there and dig it all out and say, I got it! And then there was some teeny little microscopic piece I didn't see, and then it would... Do the same thing over again.
Back over again.
I eventually got rid of it, but it was not fun.
A battle.
Not easy. Yeah.
Okay, he says, planning to also remove my entire giant clump of Vallis from my planted tank. I will then plant it in my 6-foot tank. The 6-foot really is lacking some color, so hopefully the Vallis will take hold and grow fast in there. Much more room for it to do its thing, and I'm not worried about it taking over, as the 6-foot has quite a basic light on it that will not provide much energy to the Vallis. I shall try putting some Vallis in my pond, too. I do not think it will survive, but if it does, it'd be great for the 8 goldfish to have some more hiding places. I'm
and
sure
if it
they
doesn't,
will always appreciate that.
They'll get a snack.
Yeah. My friend Christy never did get her octopus, however my friend Ben is now keen on starting his own marine nano. The real challenge now will be not exploding with too much enthusiasm, asking when he is going to buy it, and can I help him set it up, etc. I have to keep cool with the 5-year-old fish enthusiast in my... While the fish... 5-year-old fish enthusiast in my head runs around in circles shouting, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, new aquarium time!
Yes, I know the feeling. Yeah.
He says, Perth has a population of 2 million people. I would be happy to get in contact with our new Perthian contributor. If Russ could send me their email, I will start communication. And yes, Seachem Flourish Excel does kill blackbeard algae. Just double the dose that's recommended. It does not hurt the fish or plants. I have attached photos of the Vallis, Pelosion, and cyanobacteria. As you can see, sadly, the cyanobacteria is thriving again. I shall beat you one day, cyanobacteria. One day, shakes first. Very good. Okay, thank you, Matt. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Do you have any comments before we move on?
I'm trying to think. My brain is a little muddled still, I think, from being sick, but...
That's a bummer she didn't get her octopus. I want an octopus.
That would be fun.
Well, I don't know. That would be neat, though.
So, it's Josh is the other Perthian, right?
Yes.
So, Josh, can we connect you guys? That would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Finn in Exeter, California. Remember, this is the goldfish Finn who's writing to us.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm sorry it's been so long since I've emailed you. I have been very busy eating and growing and just swimming around, being the master of my aquatic domain. Paul downloaded your podcast this week, and we listened to it together, and then he agreed to let me use his email to send you an update on Finn the Fabulous Fish. That's me. There have been some milestone events in my life since we spoke last summer. First of all, in July, there was the kitchen remodel incident. Paul and Jane, his wife, decided to remodel the kitchen, which was fine with me. I live in the family room now, but years ago, I grew up in a recycled iced tea dispenser in the kitchen, and I remember how the kitchen looked awfully shabby and needed a sprucing up. Well, the workmen came and tore everything up and made a huge mess while they built cabinets, wood floors, and countertops. The trouble came one day when they had to turn off the circuit breaker and shut off power to the electrical outlets in the kitchen so they could move them around to the new countertop locations. What no one knew was that the kitchen breaker also supplies power to my lights and filters in the family room. Unbeknownst to everyone, I was without power from 6 a.m. when the remodel workmen began their treachery until Paul got home late from work that night at 10. Oh no! Well, Paul was upset and ranted on and on about how if I was a freshwater tropical fish or saltwater reef fish, I would have died from a chill, from lack of O2, from a nitrogen buildup, or at least come down with a serious case of ick or swim bladder disease. Fortunately, I am a hardy, common goldfish and seem to be quite resilient to such tragedies. I was happy to have my light back on, though.
Yeah, I'm glad it didn't end in disaster.
Scary, yeah. Second came the big fumigation episode in the fall. Jane found some nasty termites eating the timber in the old house. Well, as you might guess, we all had to move out of the house for 5 days while a giant tent with circus stripes was put over the whole house and poison gas was pumped in to kill the termites. It's really a shame because I wanted to eat those termites so much. Paul and Hannah, the younger daughter, drained my tank down to a few gallons and carried me out to the garage where they set me up on a workbench and carefully put all my water and filters back in place. I lived there happily for 5 days and couldn't even smell the car exhaust. I was a lot better off than Paul and family. They pitched a tent in the backyard and slept there in sleeping bags on the hard ground for 4 nights. I don't think they liked it too much, but Jake and Marty, the dogs, were super excited to have human company at night for a change. Next came the big New Year's surprise. Paul and family don't like football, having never been able to quite get the point of it. Yeah, I'm with you there. And so they generally sit around bored to tears on New Year's Day. Well, this year, they decided to take charge of their lives and get out and do something fun together as a family on New Year's Day. They drove to a nearby city where there was a big box store called Pets Mart. Can you believe there just happened to be a super special one-time-only sale on fish tanks that day? Wow! For practically no money at all, they bought me a brand new tank as a New Year's surprise. It's a beautiful 40-gallon bow front display tank made of glass with a bright fluorescent tube light hood. Paul and Elizabeth, the older daughter, had to reinforce the wooden counter I sit on with super heavy-duty brackets and a sheet of 3/4-inch plywood from Home Depot. All this because there was just no way that little cabinet shelf was going to hold 334 pounds of water, not to mention the weight of my gravel and filters and me. All my weight is now held by those solid steel brackets which are bolted right into the studs that frame the house itself. No more saggy countertop for me! Paul and Elizabeth moved the gravel substrate and water and plants and filter and everything else from my old 17-gallon tank to my new 40-gallon home. Everything works great, and there was no break-in period required. The tank runs just like before, except now in the wide-open spaces I can swim and swim and swim. They even sold my old tank on Craigslist to someone else who wants a fishy pet. One last thing to tell you. I guess it's because my new home is pretty big, but can you believe Paul and Elizabeth, the older daughter, measured me recently, and I am now 9 inches long from lips to tip of tail. I surprise even myself.
Wow. That's pretty
Finn
nice.
Has had an adventurous year.
Yeah. And I'm a 40-gallon home, that's so quite well. The score.
I know, that's nice.
More than twice the size of his old tank.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Sounds like he's grown quite a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shall we go to Juliet in Paris?
Yes.
Okay, now, some of this you wanted me to read, and some of it we're going to summarize, yes?
Yes, go ahead and read this first.
This first email, because we have a series of emails from Juliet today. She says, my Boraras Brigitte were zipping about the tank, feeding well and fiery red. Yesterday, I did a 15% water change, right temperature, and I used bottled Volvic, which is the bottled water all aquarists use here. I do about once a week, but usually between 5 and 10%. This morning, I only have 2 borders left. I had lost some after a water change in the past, but thought it might have been because of a new temporary beta. This time, I am not so sure. I cannot tell you what the bodies look like because the tank has a good population of ram's horns that eat everything. Does anyone have experience with these fish regarding their sensitivity? It's like having discus. I hate not doing right by my fish. I feel that if I look into their eyes, it will be like seeing Gollum saying, "Murderer."
We should get our son to do the voice.
I know, he's in bed, but yeah. He does a really good Gollum voice.
He does.
Very frustrated fish keeper, Juliet.
Yeah, I was sorry to hear that. And it turns out one of her other fish showed up. It was hiding
in
the plants.
Oh, that's good.
But she still lost some. And mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing we could figure is that it must be the water change.
What is it that they're so sensitive to?
Well, that's what she's asking, I guess. And if any of you out there have experience with this fish and with its sensitivity or whatever, that you can shed some light on the subject, that would be cool. I've never kept the species, and I'm not sure about that. It seems like it's been more than one time that it's happened, and correlation mm-hmm. is not necessarily causation.
But
however,
it's something to investigate.
It seems like that's what it is. It's the most likely explanation we can determine. So, all right. So, next thing I wanted to talk about. Juliet sent an email a few days ago saying mm-hmm. that her friend of hers has a really large aquarium. It's like probably somewhere close to 75 gallons. I mean, there are larger, but it's a large aquarium. Maybe even bigger than that. I was trying to estimate from the size dimensions she gave me. But she says, "The first thing you see when walking inside is a giant aquarium, the kind you really want to have at home but can't. His, however, was a blasted heath." So,
what happened?
3 plastic plants in a row, 3 rocks in a row, a filter rinsed in chlorinated tap water, 3 tetras, 1 blue gourami, 1 platy, 3 silver dollars, and 1 very dead pleco they thought was sleeping.
Oh, sadness.
And the glass is so covered in brownish algae it looks like someone wiped mud on it. There's 1/2 inch of reddish gungy waste on top of the black sand. The plastic plants have so much beard algae that it's bigger than their original leaves.
Wow.
Okay. So she immediately fished out the pleco. And her friend said, "Well, if you buy, I'll buy any of the plants if you come over on Sunday and help me redo everything." And so she was wondering, how can I do this? Will the shock of putting in new water, be bad for the fish? What about this substrate and planting in it? Maybe free gases that are not good. Here are the plants I'm thinking of bringing. Should I put some duckweed in? She's going to put some mangrove roots in, but they weren't boiled yet to prep them for sinking. She wasn't sure what to do with the filter exactly. So, but she told him all about tank cycling and filter media rinsing, algae control and everything. And he wants to go buy a bunch of new fish. So that's kind of a problem. And he doesn't like common corys, and his gouramis and his silver dollars are aggressive. She said the platy is miserable alone. And she was thinking maybe we can build up the tetra group. And he really wants to get some Corydoras julii, which are kind of more delicate than some others. And she told him he can't buy another huge placo, which is good. And she just wanted to know how long to wait and what kind of critters could we put on the bottom and things like that. And so I sent her some answers, and we went back and forth. She waterlogged the wood. I think she was doing it the same way I would have, and it ended up sinking. And I suggested, if it's possible, to do the substrate bit by bit. You know, if you're gravel washing a part of it at a mm-hmm. time, it's less stress on the bacteria. And also, maybe if the water pH, is too low because it's been sitting there and acidifying over time as things decompose, that doing that would be less of a shock on the system. But she had to do the whole thing because she could only do it at once. And so she did that. And I said, test the pH. She was going to do it anyway, but I mm-hmm. said, go ahead and test the pH like you were planning to do. and see if it's very different from the tap water, because that would be important. Because if you have, let's say, the water in there is 6.9 and the tap water is, 8.3, and you put tap water in there, that's going to cause a problem. Any ammonium in that low pH water would immediately become ammonia and kill things.
That would be bad.
If that were the case. And I also said, well, if there are silver dollars in the tank, you can't put plants in there. The silver dollars have got to go, or the plants can't go in, or they'll never get out. They'll be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be salad, because silver dollars are just super herbivores. So she responded. There's more here, but I'm trying to kind of give you the idea of what happened. She said, well, I've just finished my friend's aquarium. I started by testing the water, and wonder of wonders, it was clean. No nitrates, ammonia, etc., which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's not what I would have expected. But she said, I'm guessing the grunge on the floor had enough bacteria to help it on its way. True, which makes sense, although the nitrates is what's most surprising. The no nitrates. Because I would expect, if the cycle's working well, that nitrites and ammonia would be gone, but the nitrates would be elevated. But I don't know what's going on there. And she says, most of it seems to be leftovers from algae treatment, half an inch of dead algae. That's the gunk. The pH in there is 8.3, so that's good, because that means the decay that is happening hasn't affected it much for whatever reason. I guess maybe the buffering capacity of the water is really high, or the substrate or something. She says, it was so brown and dirty that I couldn't see the fish, and actually confused some very pale, unhappy black skirt tetras with young silver dollars. He had told me they were dollars too, so I feel slightly less silly. This was a really good surprise because we had some really nice plants. So that's great. You don't have to worry about getting rid of them. And he has 3 Harlequin Esbora, 5 black skirts, 1 Molly, 1 blue gourami, a real mismatched circus. But the big surprise was the temperature. It was freezing. So the heater was broken, she figured out. And the filter was just like gurgling and not doing a whole lot. So she got that taken care of, and that helped get some of the gunk out, and she replaced most of the filter media, and then took all the junky stuff. She says, plastic rocks, pagodas, colored marbles, plastic plants, and then replaced it with vals, Amazon sword, crypts, Anubias, and Java fern on the big mangrove roots, a lotus moss, a huge chunk of ceratophyllum, and different stem plants. And she ran home and got a heater, and now looks great, and the fish perked up immediately. Suddenly the black skirts have black on them again. Can't wait to see them again when the temperature is right. They may have brains smaller than their eyes, but they really enjoy natural decor and plants. The gourami and Molly immediately staked out territories. The black skirts were 100 times less skittish with plants, and the harlequins were just happy. I'm really hoping they don't all go belly up after freezing for weeks. Would be really ironic, and of course it would be the fault of the live plants. And the moss, Java ferns, and some of the stems might melt away in the high pH. Cross fingers or reach for the wallet again. Now I have to make a list of fish he can actually add, under the strict promise that he wait a month or two. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. I would normally build up the Resbora clan, but the pH is really high. Do you think it matters? They seem to be in the best shape, along with the gourami and the Molly. Bottom feeders would be nice, but what? His wife dreams of a tank with schools of miniature fish. I told her she had to wait until the others had gone to fishy heaven. Okay, so let's start there. She asked how long we would wait, and I said I would go 2 months
mm-hmm.
before adding anything else. Just, testing the water periodically and making sure everything is good, and you're not experiencing any problems. Then I would say it's safe as long as all the water parameters test out consistently nice by that time and everybody seems happy, then I would add more. And I probably would add more Resboras, Harlequin Resboras, honestly. I find that when I have kept them, they school pretty nicely. They look good. And if they're happy in that tank, the likelihood is if he goes back and gets them from the same place that he got the originals, that they're also acclimated to Paris tap water and they'll be fine. And as long as they look happy, there's no reason why you have to, avoid getting them, even though we typically keep them at slightly lower pHs than that. I wouldn't worry about it. I think it'll be fine. The bottom feeders, I would say a couple of bristlenose placos would be fine. they're not going to get very big. And, you know, if he doesn't like Aeneas quarries, then I don't know. You could try coolie loaches. I've kept coolie loaches at fairly high pHs, and they're not terribly picky about it. They seem to be fine. Hawaii was like 8.2 when I had coolie loaches in that, and they were happy. So that might be a good way to go. Let's see. But yeah, if you can get the Resboras, you know, that tank is big enough, you could have a nice, big, impressive school of it, of that species, and I think it would look really nice. All right, so she has another section of the email. Do you want to take that one?
Sure.
It just starts there.
Okay.
I broke it. I always do that. Okay. Yeah,
there we go. She says, by the way, I have just set up a tank with two fish I have never kept before, Ember tetras and Corydoras habrosus. These are fantastic fish. The embers school beautifully and eat like mini piranhas. Wonderful at feeding time. They are not aggressive, however, and don't even look at the cherry shrimp. The habrosus behave much like the larger quarries as opposed to the pygmies. They ooze personality. The red embers and fire red cherries look amazing in a planted tank. I have a tank of miniature firecrackers. I highly recommend trying these fish. Think of 100 red embers in my friend's tanks with 40 quarries when the current ones have shuffled off their immortal coils. Sorry for the long email. It was all such tremendous fun. So,
yeah,
that
does sound like a lot of fun. I'd like to see that tank. If you could shoot a video of your tank or just take a picture of it with your ember tetras and everything in it, that would be really fun. Okay, and then she's got one more email.
One more? Okay. Mm-hmm. This is post doing her friend's tank?
Yes.
Okay. She said, if I added half an inch of aqua soil to the top of the sand in my friend's aquarium, pH 8.3, it would probably lower the pH. I only have aqua soil and I have to fight to keep my water above 6.3. Is this a safe thing to do, allowing us to keep using tap water but lowering the pH to at least under 8? Also, if it did work, how long would the effect last and what would you do next?
Well, there's the question. It may do something, and of course, in such a large water volume, it may not do as much. But there is going to come a point when it won't work anymore. It's going to lose its capacity to acidify the water. And so I'm not saying you shouldn't use it necessarily, but I haven't ever used aqua soil before. And in fact, I'm trying to think, but I haven't actually used any substrates of that nature, the acidifying type substrates. I've used things like fluorite where they have some buffering capacity, I believe, if I recall correctly, but I never have, so I don't know. That's a good question, but I don't know. It's hard to say. If anybody has done that where they've added a substrate like that that can acidify the water, reduce the pH, and then seen the effects change over time, that would be great to know.
And last but not least, I recently heard a scientist say that pH was almost a myth with regards to aquarium fish. It was all really about hardness, seeing as many fish are confronted by huge amounts of rainwater that change pH and temperature rapidly and enormously.
And well, it's definitely true that you do get influx of rainwater and snowmelt and various things in bodies of water that fish live in, and that certainly has an effect on the water chemistry. I think in nature, we get lots of other things going on. We also find that things that bug our fish in a captive situation don't necessarily bug them in nature. Temperature changes.
They're usually in a bigger system.
They're in a bigger system, but you'll get fish that swim from, you know, cold water in a fairly still pool. They'll swim from cool water in the shade to in the depths in the shade to warm water up near the surface, and they do it really fast. Doesn't seem to bother them, but that sort of temperature gradient in an aquarium can sometimes bother them. Or I heard people breeding bettas outside, and the water temperature can go over 100 degrees and it can go down into the 50s during the time they're outside, you know, and that doesn't seem to bother them. But if you subject them to those sorts of fluctuations indoors, it can be a problem. So I think there's something there, you know, maybe we don't quite understand all of the factors yet, but maybe it has to do with Well, I don't know what it has to do with. It's just that it seems like fish in captivity are sometimes less resilient, maybe because they've been raised in a pretty stable environment, so subjected to that fluctuations they're not used to, and then the wild fish are more used to these fluctuations, so that they're built up against it. I don't know, but yeah, because it's true, they do get all those fluctuations, but for some reason it can still stress out fish in captivity. I think there are times when it's exaggerated, but it certainly does happen too.
Okay. She says, our tap water is also very hard. The tank is big and an RO unit is over budget. They used to get bottled water, but they live high up with no elevator, and it was impossible to keep that up nor bring in RO for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm. I would just keep using the tap mm-hmm. water. Seems like they're happy enough now using tap water, mm-hmm. so why change it?
She says, I'm sort of expecting you to say to only get fish that like very hard water, but I've had Corys, Betas, etc. breed in this stuff, and we'd love something more exciting than swordtails, guppies, and their other cousins.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, like I was mentioning before, that if the Rasboras are doing well, there's no reason why you can't get them. They may not breed in water like that, but that's not the idea here. It's just to have a nice, attractive community tank. So I'd say go for it if, you know, especially since the fish in the store are likely to be somewhat habituated to the water quality of the area. I have lived in places with hard water much of my life, and I haven't let it bother me. I mean, we've bred fish that mm-hmm. are not necessarily supposed to breed in hard water, and they've bred and stuff. So, yeah, I would say go for it. Sounds like it's been a successful project, even if stressful at the beginning, and I hope it continues.
Hey, good luck.
All right.
Is that everything?
I think so.
So, in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the AquariMag.com. For additional episodes, please visit AquariMag.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquariMag.com.